This is the Generations Radio Broadcast. Kevin Swanson, your host with you. I'm a homeschool father of five. We raise our kids out here on the eastern plains of Colorado and give them as much as we can a distinctively biblical worldview as we address issues like education, economics, politics, and every other part of life. Steve Vaughn, also in studio with me right now. And Steve, Betsy DeVos, the education secretary, has done some good things for homeschooling.
Yes.
And she has commended homeschoolers. She met with homeschoolers.
I met her. Yeah.
Homeschool organization. You were there.
Yeah. I was at the backyard barbecue. I actually made the food for that.
You made the food for Betsy DeVos?
Yes, I did.
Did she eat any of it?
Oh, she did. Her security detail ate almost all of it.
Oh, man. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, she's very concerned.
Yeah.
Not about homeschoolers. About everybody else.
Yeah.
Well, here's what she's concerned about. Student debt at $1.5 trillion, and they're not paying it back.
That's hard to believe. Why are they not paying it back?
The millennial generation?
They're
not being responsible with their loans?
I thought they were a responsible generation.
I can't believe this.
It's inexplicable.
It's inexplicable. The millennial generation not paying off their college debt. Wow. And student loan delinquency now at 12%, up from 7%. Before the last recession. So in other words, we're doing almost twice as bad on student loans as we were before the last recession. And we've been through the glory years of the American economy. Make no mistake about it. The last 6 or 7 years have demonstrated very, very low unemployment, very low unemployment, perhaps the lowest in, 30, 40 years. And the median income came back up.
Yeah.
For a while, the median income was down, but now it came back up over the last 6 or 7 years, giving the millennial generation the perfect opportunity to repay their loans. And guess what happened?
They didn't.
they didn't come through for us.
They bought the iPhone.
They didn't come through for us. Yeah. They bought the iPhone 12.
Yeah.
Or whatever it's up to right
now.
Yeah,
who knows?
I'm still at, 4 or 5?
Yeah. Don't you, have a flip phone still or something?
Yeah, okay. Well, Betsy DeVos is not happy because student loan debt has grown to over $1.5 trillion. And the Department of Education says 43% of those government-backed loans are considered in distress. That's almost half.
That's distressing.
And $1.5 trillion is serious money.
Yeah, that is.
I mean, you know, nowadays people say, yeah, it's another trillion dollars, but what is that about, 10% of the GNI? I mean, that's up there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, my friends. Well, it turns out that Americans are in trouble. The American economy is in trouble. This creates a tremendous drag on the economy. Every dollar spent paying off loans is a dollar not available to buy houses, cars, or put into savings. Nearly 20% of all loans are delinquent or in default. 12% are delinquent, meaning that there'd be 8% in default. That's 7 times the rate of delinquency on credit card debt. According to DeVos, nearly 43% of all loans are currently considered in distress. So, in other words, millennials and their college debt repayment is 7 times worse than the credit card problem in America.
Yeah, no wonder they vote for the Democratic Socialists that will give free education to everybody.
Well, they're hoping for a complete forgiveness of college debts.
But yeah,
that's what they're going for. Well, in just a second, I'm going to address a question that came from our listening audience, a question relating to exempting ourselves from Social Security. We'll be back with more on the Generations Broadcast.
It's hard to imagine Christian pastors going to jail for their faith, and it's just as hard to imagine Christian businessmen fined $135,000 for not baking a cake in celebration of a homosexual wedding. It's hard to imagine America turning into a communist state that persecutes Christians and rewards the most aberrant. Will Christians just let it happen? Should Christians just let it happen? These are important questions, my friends. This is Kevin Swanson. And I wrote the book on freedom because I wanted to build a case for freedom. A biblical case. A historical case. And let me tell you, the history of freedom is the most inspiring story you'll ever read. Have you heard the story of the Magna Carta, Bannockburn, Leyden, and William the Silent, the American Pilgrims, and the battle for King's Mountain? how will we fight for freedom in this generation and the next? Well, tell the story first. The story of freedom. Let's leave a legacy for freedom for our children and our grandchildren. Get a copy of the new book, Freedom for Each of Your Children and Grandchildren, at generations.org. That's generations.org.
And we are back on the Generations broadcast. $1.5 trillion of college debt. And of course, college debt has gone exponential, hyperbolic, in just the last 10 or 15 years. And it turns out $1.5 trillion, 43% of these loans are in distress. And Betsy DeVos is concerned. Turns out that $1.5 trillion is more than $10,000 of someone else's student loan debt for each and every American taxpayer.
Hey.
That's you and me, so you owe $10,000, I owe $10,000.
But at least they got a great education.
Yeah, okay.
So it's worth it, right?
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
So I just will deduct the $10,000 from my daughter's weddings when they show up, you know.
Uh-huh.
So that, yeah, I'll just pay a little less for that.
Well, friends, certainly this is what they call the college bubble. The college return on investment less than it's ever been, and more Americans than ever attending college, and yet getting less and less out of it. Well, let's consider this question that came in to the Generations program. Now, this came directly to me, so it may not have come directly to the program, but a Christian pastor is moving from the UK to the United States. He's taking a pastorate in the United States. He asked me about exempting himself from Social Security. Coming from the UK and having lived in Canada for 4 years, he said, I'm surprised this is even an option. I'm obviously opposed to socialism in all its forms, and this option to opt out of an unusual opportunity to avoid part of the government and force socialism to which I'm accustomed, and so forth. So,
yeah.
And England, Canada, other places tend to be more socialist than America. They tend not to have the opt-outs for socialist medicine, as in Samaritan Ministries and other opportunities. We have an opportunity for freedom. We have carved out islands of freedom in America, unlike many other English-speaking nations and developed nations around the world that have given themselves almost entirely to socialism.
Yeah, I wish I had the opportunity to opt out of Social Security. I'd do it at a heartbeat.
In a heartbeat.
Yeah, I'm a business owner, and so when I write the checks to the government, the Social Security, Medicare, you know, FICA taxes are like huge.
It's one of the few exemptions from Social Security left. Of course, if you're Amish, the Amish, I believe, still have an opt out of Social Security. So if you get yourself one of those hats.
Yeah.
The black hats,
yeah,
the blue outfit and all that.
I don't look good in those, so
that probably is not going to work for you.
Out. Yeah,
okay. Dave Ramsey interacted with this question of whether pastors should take advantage of this this form. I believe it's 4597, the form to opt themselves out of Social Security. And Dave Ramsey's site said, "If I were in your shoes and still serving as a church pastor, I'd opt out in a nanosecond."
Yeah,
so that was
that's pretty quick.
the article on Dave Ramsey's site, he says pastors can opt out of Social Security on a religious basis. Under the tax law, you can be a conscientious objector. God clearly tells us to manage our money well, and Social Security is not a good money manager. So you have a viable reason for opting out of Social Security. That's Dave Ramsey. If you don't put your money in Social Security, you have to do the following three things. You have to save for retirement, get life insurance, or get long-term disability insurance. And he says if you do that, you'll have thousands of dollars more if you save this way. So that's Dave Ramsey's recommendation. And I did it. I opted out in a heartbeat. If you get any income from a local church and your denomination has ordained you or licensed you as a pastor, then you can opt out of Social Security. You do have to sign up for a certain commitment, though.
Yeah.
So I took a look at the form 4361 and exempted myself from Social Security some 18 years ago. And you have to certify that as a duly ordained, commissioned, or licensed minister of a church or a member of a religious order, not under a vow of poverty, I have informed the ordaining, commissioning, or licensing body of my church or order that I'm conscientiously opposed to, or because of religious principles, I'm opposed to the acceptance of any public insurance that makes payments in the event of death, disability, old age, or retirement, or that makes payments towards the cost of or provides services for medical care, including the benefits of any insurance system established by the Social Security Act.
I could sign that. Except for I'm not being paid by a church and I'm not part of a religious order. Maybe I could take a vow of poverty. I don't know.
Well, that's not included under this particular form. Yeah. Okay. But anyway, that's the application for exemption from self-employment tax for use by ministers, members of religious orders, and Christian Science practitioners. So that was one little exemption you have to Social Security tax or Medicare taxation. And some pastors sign this, and I would sign it in a heartbeat.
Oh, yeah. Because, I mean, that's a lot of money.
Ultimately, I've got 5 Social Security programs.
Right.
Right?
I've got 6.
You've got 6. I've got 5.
Yeah.
You know, at one point in time, people had relationships.
Yeah. Now they have Facebook friends.
Relationships. Yeah. You know, family.
Yeah.
Church. Now you have faceless friends in Washington, D.C. that provide for your care in your old age, until they run out of money, and then they euthanize you.
Yeah. Yeah. They give you a pain pill so you can...
While they euthanize you.
While they euthanize you, yes.
Well, friends, everybody knows that Social Security is a ripoff. It's not an insurance program. It's not a savings program. In 2011, you know, Social Security went into the red for the first time. Really bad timing. That was the first year that 80 million baby boomers started retiring.
Yeah.
Well, and will retire for the next 25 years.
That was expected, though.
Pretty sad, yeah. And it was also a time in which the federal government had increased its debt-to-GDP ratio from 60% to 104%. So a very, very bad time in American history. And the possibility of you getting more than about $5 a month to cover a loaf of bread in 2045, probably rather slim.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're going to be without Social Security anyway. You might as well opt out as a pastor if you can.
If you can, sure, sure. I think so. You know, the modern world also requires so many financial safety nets, lots and lots of financial safety nets, so you won't have to rely on God, you won't have to rely on the church, and you won't have to rely on your family.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty much it. Yeah. I think that's pretty much it. The church is not necessary because there's always the insurance programs and government to help you. Now, as it turns out, Social Security also is welfare, and I'm not a big fan of redistributing wealth.
Yeah.
Now, if Social Security program was an investment program, and you got everything you put into it plus the interest rates, then it would be more attractive for somebody like me. But the idea of, you know, going to your neighbor, putting a gun to his head, and requiring him to give you a stipend every month is not attractive to me. I don't find that attractive. Now, the other thing you could do is you could vote for government officials who would take a gun to every one of your neighbors, put it to their head, and require your neighbors to sign over a check for your monthly sustenance. You could do that as well. But it seems to me that is also a form of robbery. And I'm not in favor of this kind of redistribution of wealth.
Yeah, and it's getting to be fewer and fewer neighbors that you're going to have to rely on, so it's going to be a bigger and bigger chunk out of their paycheck to pay for the people, because the baby boomers constituted a huge part of the population, and they're starting to retire, and they're wanting their Social Security checks, and there's fewer people because the birth rate's down, there's fewer people working, and so now it's down to, what, 2.33 people that are responsible for the paychecks every month?
Mm-hmm.
Something like that.
Yeah, and eventually you run out of other people's money.
Right.
And see, the scheme will not work forever. The idea of breaking God's 8th commandment institutionally by the federal government year in and year out, friends, is not going to work eventually. By the way, Social Security is welfare. It's not insurance. It's not an annuity. It's not a savings program. Social Security is a welfare.
And it's not secure.
And this from the Freedom Foundation. Listen to what this economist writes. Social Security is welfare because there is no connection between the taxes paid and the benefits received. Take two men who are the same age, have identical incomes. One works for exactly 35 years, reaches full retirement age, and then retires. The other works for 45 years, reaches full retirement age, and then retires. Since Social Security benefits are based on the average of a worker's 35 highest years of earnings, as related above, the benefit among these two men receive every month will be substantially the same. The fact that each man paid vastly different amounts into the system yet received basically the same benefits is irrefutable proof that there is no connection between Social Security taxes and benefits. You agree with that?
Yeah. Yeah, it's not considered a means tested, which is based upon your income type of benefit. There's 72 other means-tested programs the federal government offers based upon your income that they give away.
But Social Security is not one of them, at least between certain amounts.
Right, right.
Social Security is welfare because Congress may at will change the Social Security benefit schedule at any time. Your earnings may increase or decrease in the future. After you start receiving benefits, they will be adjusted for cost of living increases. Your estimated benefits are based on current law. The law governing benefit amounts may change because by 2036, the payroll taxes collected will be enough to pay only about 77% of scheduled benefits. And that, of course, is assuming that the CPI is according to their estimations. I mean, your CPI may be such that, you know, whatever your Social Security benefit might cover a loaf of bread per month by 2036. So, friends, your benefit amount may be affected by military service, railroad employment, or pensions earned through work on which you did not pay Social Security tax. Social Security taxes exist simply for the purpose of raising revenue, and they have been increased about 20 times since the program began. Social Security is welfare.
Yeah,
it's not a savings program.
And there is no Social Security trust fund. There's just this big IOU because there's no money in that system. That was what was the guarantee, was that they would set this money aside, but they didn't. They took it out and paid for other programs, and the Social Security is not even there anyway. It's just big, massive IOU, and it's just a big debt.
Well, why would I exempt myself from Social Security, friends? Well, because it's Social Security. Think about the words themselves. Social Security. It's socialist security. It's governmental security by way of a welfare program. And friends, if you like freedom, if you prefer freedom, wouldn't you seek out opportunities for freedom? 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verses 21 to 23 encourages anybody who's subjected to the unnecessary servitude of men to seek it rather. If they have an opportunity to be free, seek it rather. Ye are the servants of God. Be not the servants of men. You are bought with a price, that is the price of the blood of Jesus Christ. If you have opportunities to exempt yourselves from the unnecessary servitude of men, use it rather. That's what Paul tells us in 1 Corinthians 7, 21 to 23. That's the principle governing freedom for the Christian. Whether it be a freedom from the unnecessary servitude of a local slave master or some large federalist government that's controlling every aspect of your life, if you can be free, use it rather. Paul's words in 1 Corinthians 7, 21. And Samuel Adams' words, if you love wealth more than liberty, the tranquility of servitude better than the animating contest of freedom, depart from us in peace. We ask not your counsel nor your arms. May your chains rest lightly upon you, and may posterity forget that you were our countrymen. People prefer security over freedom in a socialist age.
Yeah, and that is just, you know, if you're looking for security rather than freedom, you're not going to get either one of those, especially when you're relying upon the government. You need to rest in God, who gives you true freedom and true security. That's eternal security, not Social Security.
Well, friends, if you prefer freedom, if you have the opportunity to opt yourself out of Social Security or any other part of the unnecessary servitude of men, use it rather. But I would encourage you also to sign up for Samaritan Ministries, especially since Medicare is probably not going to provide anything for you anyway. Get used to biblical approaches in which Christians medically share with one another on a monthly basis, and SamaritanMinistries.org is a wonderful opportunity to do that and to avoid the socialist medical programs like Obamacare, Medicare, or Medicaid. So if you have opportunity to exempt yourself from these programs, and you can do so by a free market approach, much like SamaritanMinistries.org, I'd say go for it. And also, here's one more tip. Exemplify a care for your elderly parents so your children will know this is their natural duty. Remember a story in a pagan country, I think it was China, where in the 18th, 19th century, the father was taking the grandfather up into the mountains to leave him there. It's sort of a euthanasia approach to life. And the son came along with the father. And as he was running alongside his father, he reminded him, "I'm so glad I get to go with you, Father, because I need to know where to take you when you reach the age of Grandpa." Again, friends, when we abandon our family to other means and we don't take care of our own aging mothers and fathers, we send a message to our children. So exemplify care for your elderly parents so your children will know that this is their natural duty. In fact, Paul says in 1 Timothy chapter 5, if a Christian man doesn't care for his grandmother, he has denied the faith and he is worse than an unbeliever. We had the opportunity last year to care for Brenda's mother full time. It was 7/24 care for about a year. And Brenda teamed up with her sister for this. And then my daughters got involved in the last few months. They took four 6-hour shifts each day for several months, all the way through graveyard shift, all the way around the clock for 7 days a week for months on end, and took care of her, meaning trach care for her bodily fluids, care for her feeding. And she was unable to respond at all for about a year. But it was a 7/24 care, and we had the opportunity to turn her over to a welfare program where it would have cost somewhere around $300,000 per year for welfare to take care of her. But we also noted that while she was on insurance in the same care facility, they wouldn't turn her, you know, six, mm-hmm. eight times a day. And so we just didn't think that $300,000 a year to cover bed sores, you know, to provide for, you know, bed sores was a good way to care for grandma. So we went ahead and did it ourselves. We provided just a little bit of income for our children during the graveyard shift. We couldn't afford the other shifts. But during graveyard shifts, we provided our kids with, you know, $10 or $11 an hour kind of a program. Yeah. And we cared for grandma. I'm going to say we probably spent $2,000 or $3,000 in cash. But generally, it was just love that was shared on the part of my children for grandma during her waning months and days and hours. And that was a great opportunity for our family. We had the option of putting on the welfare program, but decided to care for her ourselves. And we used up the last bit of the private insurance program in the process, but we did not put her on welfare. We just felt it would be better if we provided the care ourselves. I know this is a shock to the system of the modern socialists that tune into this program. It's a shock to anybody because we've all been raised as socialists, but we need to wean ourselves from this, and we need to wean ourselves now because you know what? The time will come when we will run out of other people's money and the euthanasia blight that will come over this nation. We're talking hundreds of millions of people killed in the Western world by their kids and grandkids because of the pro-death attitude that has been shared over the last 40 to 50 years on the part of the Gen X generation and the baby boom generation. They have killed 80 million babies. I'm guessing about 80 million baby boomers will see themselves euthanized in the years to come, unless Christians come up with a different approach that involves the maintenance of the Eighth Commandment as well as the Sixth Commandment. That is, we don't need to redistribute government money, and we don't need to euthanize our elderly grandparents and parents.
Yeah. And, you know, as a nurse, you know, again, I'm a registered nurse. I've worked in the hospital. I've worked in home care. I've worked in a nursing home. And as much as I could love my patients, I could not love them as much as their families could, because their families had investment into their family member. And so they want to, you know, a loving family is going to want to take that extra mile, do that extra care, take the extra time that somebody who's seeing 8-10 patients just can't. It's just not physically possible to be in the room 24 hours a day as you can be if you have them in your home.
And I think hospice was shocked at the level of care we could provide grandma in those waning months. Friends, this is a whole different worldview. I realize we are turning your worldview on a 180 right now. But friends, the Word of God calls us to repentance. The Word of God calls us to renew our minds according to the will of God, instead of conforming to the worldview of the world around us that is forcing us into the socialist, derelationalized mold. So friends, maintain good relationships with your kids. Leave an inheritance for them if you can. And of course, our plan is to live with our children until we pass on. We take up this amazing Christian vision in my book, Family Life, available at our website, kevinswanson.com or generations.org. Again, I recommend a whole different view of how we take care of our elderly parents and how we raise our children. We don't turn them over to the state for the state to raise them when they're 6 or 7 years of age. And we don't turn them over to the state to euthanize them when they're 76 years old. It's a whole different worldview picture, and you'll get it in our book, Family Life, available at our website, generations.org. Get your copy of Family Life, available at our website, generations.org, today, and get the Christian view of life, the Christian view of family. With this new book, Family Life, available at generations.org. This is Kevin Swanson and Steve Vaughn in studio, and we invite you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.